All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I guess first show of the offseason edition. As disappointing as it is to say, I am Bobby Fenton, and we are set for the conference championship round this Sunday. Sadly, our Tampa Bay Buccaneers will not be involved in it. They go down to the Los Angeles Rams at home in the divisional round, 30-27. And you've all seen it by now, but we'll kind of have a post-mortem on the whole thing today on the show and look ahead to the offseason. And, you know, I say over and over when these things happen, I always like having a few days. I like having the show come out later in the week because my show today will sound completely different than it would have sounded if I had done it on Monday or Sunday night or even Tuesday. So having a few days to let it marinate a little bit, kind of get in the right frame of mind helps. And maybe it'd be fun. You know, it's always fun to hear the reactionary stuff, the raw stuff. And so, you know, there's definitely a place for that. I think it's maybe in a lot of ways pretty entertaining, but it wouldn't be what I really meant and what I really felt. I needed that cooling off period. But I did go to the game on Sunday evening, froze my ass off. I actually didn't feel that bad, but, you know, it could have been a little warmer. I still remember walking out of the stadium. This happens, you know, haven't had a home playoff game in a while, but especially when it's a home playoff game and you lose and you walk out of there and you're like, well, I mean, maybe Monster Jam, I guess I'll be back maybe for that. My kids like that with the monster trucks. But other than that, I guess I'll see you in September, our Raymond James Stadium. It was a bummer. I took one last look at the field, the beautiful blades of grass, the bright red logo at midfield. Turned around, walked out through that tunnel. That was that. And it was a hard one to swallow. Listen, if they had lost that game like 27-10, you know, however that first half went, and then maybe they get a cheap garbage touchdown in the second half, I probably would have forgotten about it 5 minutes later. Hey, wasn't our day. Didn't have it today. Got outplayed. The better team won, blah, blah, blah. But to have them come back like that, and there are, you know, if you watch sports long enough, there are improbable comebacks. You see them all the time, and every time I hear people say, oh man, this game's over, blah, 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 I think to myself, like, you've been watching sports for more than 5-10 minutes, right? Because this stuff does happen. Even knowing that, though, that one on Sunday surprised me. Like, when it was 27-3, and I didn't say it, my son, who's 10, and he hasn't watched as many sports as I have yet, but, you know, we were at the game, he was there with me, and he's like, Dad, you know, this one's over, man. I kept saying, hey, just hang on a little bit. You know, I know it probably is over. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying you watch sports long enough, you see this stuff happen. And I didn't really even believe it when I was telling him that. But, you know, then we get a couple touchdowns. The turnover started happening. The craziest play of the game to me, when I literally couldn't believe what I was seeing, was when we threw the interview. Like, we were starting to kind of maybe mount a little comeback there in the fourth quarter. But then Brady threw that pick. He was trying to hit, I think it was Gronkowski, on the corner route toward the sideline on the near side. And the Rams safety jumped up in front of it and made a beautiful interception. Caught it, landed in bounds, like right after we had just gotten the ball back. And I was like, oh, God, you know, that's just brutal. You can't do that. I mean, come on, man. Like, we're trying to come back here. You get a gift. You get the ball back and you give it back on the first play. And then the next play after that, they had the bad snap and the ball's rolling like literally 30, 40 yards downfield. And everybody in the whole stadium is just screaming. Like, that was surreal. I was like, I can't believe, like, literally cannot believe that this is happening. And then we picked the ball up and get it back. And then I was like, well, we have to at least give this a shot now, right? I mean, they can't have the Rams, like, really should have won the game by multiple touchdowns, but they tried their damnedest to let the Bucs back in it. And the Bucs tied it, so it wasn't over. But then to have all that happen, oh man, tough way to end it. We'll talk about it on the show today. So let's get some housekeeping stuff out of the way. Of course, if you want to get a hold of me, you can always do that. The email address is the same as it's always been, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. Same thing on Twitter. You can follow me at bobbygameday. Thanks to the Joes for giving me the chance to be on here on this number one place, TV, radio, internet, wherever, for Bucks coverage, JoeBucksFan.com. And thanks, of course, to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. If you're looking for a new car, a used car, pre-owned, van, truck, whatever it is, it's all there. Go to the website first, BillCurryFord.com, C-U-R-R-I-E. Check it out. If you want to go in person, which I recommend, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry, just north of Hillsboro. Either way, you get a total look at the full inventory. If you go to the website, the completely transparent online, no haggle pricing is right there. And you can start sinking your teeth into this stuff. And again, they've got it all. So whether it's something you want that's brand new, maybe just a couple years old, Maybe it's something you want that's a few years old. It doesn't matter. They've got it all, and they will bring it to you at your home or office if you don't want to go there. They'll do the home delivery for both a test drive and a purchase, and it's all covered if you buy a car there under the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty, which means if you have that car that you bought at Bill Curry Ford, as long as you're the one that still owns it, you're covered under engine trouble. You bring it back to the service center, which is right next door. They'll take care of everything. So that peace of mind, along with the car you're going to get, is an incredible value. Check them out, BillCurryFord.com. I almost got backed up to BillCurryFord.com, by the way, on Sunday, getting out of the damn stadium. Let me say this real quick. Park, if you ever park in there, it depends on where you're going back to, park on the east side of Dale Mabry, because I parked at HCC, and instead of just getting back onto Dale Mabry to go home like everybody normal would want to do, they make you go back through, like, you know, Drew Park, and you get, it's ridiculous. And then they could do so much better of a job of getting people out of there. You park on the other side of Dale Mabry, or in the neighborhood there off of Himes, I'm home in like literally 7 minutes, even if it's a huge crowd. The night and day difference. So avoid the HCC lot like the plague is my advice. But anyway, let's talk about this game because, you know, the final drive is what everyone's going to remember. If you look at the game in whole, you shouldn't lose a lot of sleep, honestly, because the Bucks were outplayed, the Rams were the better team, and only because of some really atrocious turnovers and some luck were the Bucks even in that game to begin with. But since they were there, you might as well win it, and that leads us to the final drive. The game turned, and a game like that always does, on so many little things that if any one thing is different, you know, the whole thing could have been different. Aside from all the things that helped the Bucks, of course, there was also the third down. Now, when the Bucks had the ball, this is when they're down 27-20, and they're driving to try and get the game-tying touchdown. And they had a third, I think it was 7 or 8 or something like that. And they completed the pass, and the ball was spotted about 6 inches short of the marker. And it brought up 4th and inches, and that would be the play the Bucks would score on with Leonard Fournette. But that was an interesting turning point, because when you're down like the Bucks were down that whole game, whether it's 27-3 or even in that case 27-20, of course beggars can't be choosers. You just want to get the touchdown. You don't care how. You're not thinking, well, let's run the clock all the way down and score right as time expires, and then we can go to overtime. You don't know if you're going to get that chance, so you just want to score. So if the Bucks had gotten that first down that ended up being 4th and inches, I think they would have started to take their time a little bit. If they happen to score on their first play, great, but I don't think they would have been very aggressive. And yet it ended up being 4th and inches, and Fournette scores. And again, the Rams, the defense the Rams were in is different in 4th and inches than it would have been on 1st and goal. But Fournette scores on that 4th and goal, and I looked right at my buddy Drew, who was there with me too, and we both did that thing where you point to your wrist. I looked at the clock. What was it? 40, I think it was 40-something seconds. Or it might have been, yeah, it was right around 40 seconds, whatever it was. 44, I think it was. And I looked at Drew, and I was like, I mean, that's awesome. We just tied the game. But yeah, I really wish that didn't say 44. I was hoping to have that under 20 or so by the time the Bucks got the touchdown. And it looked for a while like it was going to. Again, beggars can't be choosers. Leonard Fournette's running across the first down chains, and I'm jumping up and down. Then he's keeping on going, and he crosses the goal line. I'm 10 feet in the air. I'm, oh, my God, yeah, we just tied the game. But I was like, you know, I even tweeted it, and you can timestamp the tweet if you don't believe me. I said, we left Stafford time. So, okay, then the final drive happens, and I was livid in the moment. And even Sunday night and even Monday, I was livid. I tweeted about, what are the Bucks doing? You know, the zero blitz call. Why aren't they just keeping the play in front of them? That's all they had to do. You know, in the moment, you get like that. But getting a chance to watch that final drive back after I calmed down, I'm not as critical, at least from the coaching side of it, as I was the other night. I mean, here's what happened. It was, you know, we kicked it in the end zone. There's the touchback. So it's 1st and 10 from the 25. At this point, they've got, 40 seconds left, okay? First play, Stafford drops back. We get great pressure. He tries to step up through it just to run and get a few yards, and we sack him for a 1 yard loss. He fumbles, and I don't know how many people noticed it. My heart jumped into my throat because he got sacked. I saw one of the Bucks linebackers, I can't remember who it was, sprint up toward the pile. I was like, oh my God, and the ball's out. And then everybody just kind of stopped, and I was like, oh. And so then I thought, oh, well, it looked like a fumble, but it wasn't. Turns out he did fumble the ball briefly. Ball's on the ground, okay? Bucks recover that. They kick the field goal as time expires, and we're getting ready to host San Francisco on Sunday. But Stafford regathered his own fumble. They used their last timeout. So now it's 2nd and 11, or actually he lost 2 yards, 2nd and 12. He got the timeout with 35 seconds left. We're in a pretty good spot now, but there's still 35 seconds. This was a huge play here. Everyone's going to talk about the play to cut down the field, and we will too, but a really, really big play, 2nd and 12. They get Kupp on like a deep out route on the left side, the near side, if you're watching on TV. And Sean Murphy Bunting falls down. Kupp puts such a move on him. Ankle breaker, Murphy Bunting's on the ground. Now Kupp's running clear, makes the catch. Not only gets 20 yards, but here was the critical part. They let him get out of bounds. Mike Edwards was back there at safety. He came up to try. He didn't give, I'm not saying he didn't try. I don't think he had the presence of mind that, you know, we need to keep him in bounds. I think he just wanted to make sure Kupp didn't run upfield more. So he gave kind of a passable effort to get him down, but not really in bounds. And I thought maybe he could have done a little more. Jamel Dean was there too. But Edwards, if he had been a heat-seeking, and he dove too, which I didn't like. I wish he had broken his hips down and just wrapped up Kupp and just kept him somehow on the green grass. But he didn't. He lunged at Kupp. Kupp sidestepped him, ran out of bounds. That was huge because they didn't have any timeouts at that point. So now, not only is it a 20-yard gain up to the Rams 44, but the clock stops at 28 seconds. You have to figure that would have gotten below 20 if the clock had continued to run before they were able to get up to the line and either spike it or run a play. And if that happens, they're not doing that downfield thing. They're probably just trying to get something, you know, to the sideline or something like that, because even if they complete a deep ball like they did, they wouldn't have had time to go up and spike it. But anyway, you know, having Sean Murphy Bunting fall down was bad. Not having somebody else come up to clean it up inbounds was even worse. Kupp gets out of bounds. Now 1st and 10 at the Rams 44. Now there's 28 seconds left. So this is where, and I think Tony Dungy tweeted about it, and I retweeted, and he was saying, I'm just baffled. What is the deal with the zero blitz call? What are the Bucs doing? All you have to do is just keep things in front of you and just not give up a big play. It's not as true as I thought. They're at the 44. And again, when things are happening fast, you don't necessarily realize. They only need, and Matt Gay, he had come up short on that field goal earlier, which was baffling, because I know he has a cannon, and I don't think it was partially blocked. And being there at the game in person, I didn't see if anything, maybe that he kicked the ground, or I don't even know if NBC like showed something. But it was very strange that he had been short on the 40-something yarder. Still, I know what Matt Gay can do. You know, he's got a big leg. So being at their own 44, what do they need, you know? 15 yards to have a realistic look at beating us, and you don't even want to give that much up. So it's not as easy as, let them have the underneath stuff, because they can get 5, 10, 15 yards on that too. So in retrospect, and I should probably even clarify my tweet, you know, in fairness, because I still have the tweet up there. In retrospect, I'm not as mad about the zero blitz call as I thought. It happens. You know, they were getting pressure, although on the zero blitz call, it actually was Sue who provided the pressure, so the blitz didn't matter much anyway. And, you know, what really happened was Antoine Winfield got beat, and there was some communication issues. If you rewatch the film right before the snap, they're all barking at each other. They're not on the same page. And then Winfield's flat-footed. I think he knew his assignment. I don't think he was completely confused, but it just didn't, you know, didn't have time to get set in the athletic position and really just say, okay, I am not letting this man run by me. It all just kind of happened. And he let the man run by him. And so Cooper Kupp, I mean, hats off to him. Hats off to Stafford, because Stafford had Sue bearing down on him. Didn't even see his own throw. I mean, he got hit as he let it go. He was tumbling, and Brian Baldinger did a nice breakdown on his little film thing that he does on his Twitter account. And, you know, he said, Stafford's eating dust by the time this ball reaches its arc. He never even saw it, but it landed. I swear, if you had a little parachute on that thing to put it exactly where you wanted it, it landed right where Cooper Kupp was, right in his arms. So that's execution. At the biggest moment of their season and ours, all right, Stafford, Cooper Kupp, they stepped up. They made a play. Sue made a play, too. He did his job. Winfield got beat on his job. But those guys made the play, and they had been making them all day on the Bucs defense. You know, we heard all this stuff about first game of the year with the Bucs defense having all 11 guys just like it's supposed to be, and that didn't actually turn out real well. But, you know, you have to tip your hat to the other guys sometimes. I'm not going to crucify Todd Bowles the way I thought I was going to want to on Sunday night or on Monday morning. You know, it is what it is. They got beat. But there was some really tough, and it wasn't just that end drive. I mean, looking at the early part of the game, you know, and Mike Edwards had a rough day. That third and 19, where, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to force a punt here. This was in the first quarter, I believe. Or no, maybe it was the second. I think it was the second quarter. Early second quarter. Third and 19, we're going to get the ball back. Maybe we can, you know, we slow start for the Bucs, but it was, I think it was 10-0 at that point, maybe. It wasn't bad. And they hit that bomb 80-something yard or 90, or not 80-something yards, 70-something yards to Cup on a play where they're in standard cover two. And, you know, we all know as Bucs fans, because we've been, you don't have to be a football genius to know cover two if you're a Tampa sports fan, because, you know, that, the basics of that defense are two deep safeties. They got deep halves. They kind of work a little bit more toward the sideline, though, right? And who's got that middle guy? The linebacker. You have to have a fast, athletic middle linebacker, Devin White in this case. So Devin White picked up his guy down the middle, but Mike Edwards running with the same guy. Meanwhile, the deep half, which is his guy, I mean, Edwards had no reason to be inside on that play, and Cooper Kupp's running just alone down the sideline. Carlton Davis is playing the shallower part, the flats. His job is to hand off that guy if he's running deep to the safety that's supposed to be behind him, which he did. And just stuff like that is like, I mean, that's basic. Like, that's preseason stuff. And we're doing that in a playoff game. And you can't give up, I mean, not only give up 70-something yard touchdowns in general, but on a third and 19 when you're about to get off the field. That felt like a, I mean, it really felt like a 14-point swing, even though we hadn't officially scored yet. Hey, we're going to get a punt. We're going to get good field position. We're going to go score. Oh, wait, they just went the other way for 80 yards. That was, I mean, that was bad, you know? And that got the Bucs in a big hole that it didn't look like they'd be able to work out of. To their credit, they did. But, you know, the final drive is what we'll all remember because the Bucs had a chance. They had a chance, and they let it go. And yet, the entire game, if you look at it, I don't think that injustice was served or anything like that. But it really is a testament. And I say this all the time. I mean, people really, this is human nature. And I've learned this with religion. I'm not going to get into a whole existential thing here, but I've learned this with religion. I've learned it with sports. I've learned it with a lot of things. People need to feel like things happen for a reason. People need to feel like what happened was what was supposed to happen. Their peace of mind depends on it. And so, you know, you'll often hear people say, oh, well, you know, even though insert whatever crazy ass thing happened, and so many of them happened just in this weekend's games alone, but they'll say, well, despite that, you know, the Rams did this, that, and the other earlier in the game, and they could have done this, that, and the other, and they should have won. And that's true. That's true. But, you know, I look back at last year and this year. This year's team had a much better chance of being a Super Bowl champion than last year's team, right? Going to get the start of the playoffs. Like, if you were going to look at both teams, the 2020 Bucs and the 2021 Bucs, and say which one's more likely to be a Super Bowl champion, easily this year's team. But some of the stuff's just random, all right? Jared, I say it all the time, Jared Cook doesn't fumble in the divisional game in New Orleans last year, we probably don't win that game. And I've had people email me say, oh yeah, but you know, the Bucs still made a lot more play. Maybe so. Jared Cook doesn't fumble in that game, we don't win that game. Packers game, same thing, all right? That's Scotty Miller TD before the half. One of the most improbable plays in Bucs history. Had no business happening. If one guy on Green Bay knows his assignment or just knows the game situation or what the hell's going on any better, we don't get that touchdown before half, I don't think we win that game. Maybe we still do. I'm not sure about that one. Anyway, the point is, the improbable things upon improbable things upon improbable things that happened last year's playoffs to get where the Bucs got, it's randomness. And this year, great team. We're at home. Easy first-round matchup. They breezed through it. Good Rams team in the second-round matchup. But again, some crazy stuff happened. And the randomness works both ways because the randomness could have won us the game or it could have lost us the game by, you know, three touchdowns instead of 3 points. But either way, what it gets back to is what I always say with the randomness. Be consistently good. Be a good team. Be there. Make playoffs every year. Which is really hard to do. I'm not saying it's not, but that's, it's never about, oh, this one year is our shot to win the Super Bowl. This is our best chance yet. You just need to keep having chances. It's almost like just a little bingo box with the balls in it. You know, every year, just have a few balls in there. Your ball will come out eventually. And it might not be the year where you have the most balls. If you were going to say, like, there's 30 bingo balls. Last year, we probably had 2 or 3 in the hopper. This year, we probably had like 7 or 8 in the hopper. But last year, one of our balls got pulled, you know? No pun intended. You see what I'm saying, though? Like, you don't know when it's going to happen, and the year it's supposed to happen isn't always the year it happens. but the year it's not sometimes is. So I look at the last 2 years of Bucks football, okay? They've been consistently good. Overall, they were 24-9 with a 5-1 record in the playoffs. So overall, 29-10 in football games. And 1 year they got hot and it all came together and they had the Super Bowl in Tampa, which was great too. And so, you know, when that happens, and as improbable as that is, when that happens and you have people coming back, everybody says, oh, well, you'll win it again. But I mean, I don't care how good you are. 1-32 is 1-32. And these things very rarely end the way you want them to. I mean, again, it doesn't matter who you are. So they got to the Final Eight this year, played a really good team, a team I think has a great chance to win this weekend against San Francisco. I think whoever won on Sunday, that's the other part that's heartbreaking. I think whoever won that game, I think, is the likely Super Bowl representative. Maybe the Niners surprise everybody, but, you know, that's a Rams team that could win the Super Bowl themselves. And so there's no shame in it. It hurts. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think they did, I'm not going to say they did everything they could, but under the circumstances, to even have that game in the fourth quarter be in, you know, in contest was an accomplishment after what it looked like it was going to be like the first half of the game. So just consistently be good. Just keep being a team that's there, winning record, playoff games, divisional titles on occasion that you're hosting. Just be there, you know, and you've got a chance. And so that leads us to the next thing, which is what, you know, obviously Tom Brady is the big reason why this franchise is where it is today compared to where it was after the final play of that 2019 season. And I said last week, you know, I don't think it's his last year, but that's just me saying that. Who knows? You've heard what he's had to say now since then. He's addressed it a little bit, although not definitively. And there's no sense in speculating on it. I'm sure before free agency starts, I'm sure the Bucks would like some sort of, you know, advance notice on whatever it's going to be. But I still would be very surprised if he doesn't play this coming season. But I wouldn't be surprised completely if he didn't either. And I told you I'd be really, really surprised if Tristan Wirfs didn't play this past Sunday on this very show a week ago, and that proved to be completely wrong. I was very surprised. I thought for sure he'd be out there on Sunday. I'm not criticizing him at all. I just mean, when they said early Sunday, oh, the inactives, he's inactive, I was like, wait, what, really? I was like, oh, man. And looking at the snap counts, incidentally, and Josh Wells gave it a hell of a, you know, obviously it's not what you want with the backup, but Josh Wells, and he had a bad quad, and he's going up against Aaron Donald and Von Miller, so he did what he could. Bless his heart. Nick Leverett was in there a little bit, too. Offensive line got chewed up. It wasn't just because of the backups. It wasn't just because they were missing Tristan Wirfs. I mean, it was a tough day all across the front there, and that was a big reason why the Bucs offense couldn't get anything going for the better part of three quarters of that game. Defensively is where I was a little more miffed at the snap counts because, you know, injuries were one thing, but, you know, JPP, for example, 62 of 72 snaps. And I love the guy. We all love him. Everybody loves JPP. All right, but he's just out there at this point. If you were watching him, you know, a few times at the game, I was just kind of watching him, and he's just not making an impact. Anthony Nelson's been better this year. 10 snaps for him. Joe Tryon Shoyinka sure as hell gives him a better chance to get something generated up there. 14 snaps. So they went down with the guys they know, but it kind of felt like John McNamara in the 86 World Series having Bill Buckner out there at first base when there was a defensive replacement available because he wanted to win the World Series with his guys out there. That's what this felt like. I don't think it gave the Bucks the best chance to win. And I'm not hanging anything on specifically these certain decisions. But having JPP out there for all those snaps and keeping younger studs like Tryon Shoyinka and Anthony Nelson, you know, on the shelf for the most part, I didn't think helped the Bucks' chances. On the flip side, though, they weren't doing it with Vita Vea. You thought, okay, he's going to ride his horses that he knows. Okay, well, Vita Vea too. But Vita Vea only played 34 snaps. That's less than half, 47%. And I don't know, you know, if you're not part of the team, if you're not there on the sideline, maybe that's all Vea could do. Maybe he has some sort of injury we don't know about. He looked okay when he was in there. But, you know, he should have, in my opinion, you know, he should be, for the contract we just signed him to, be more of a guy we lean on in situations like that. He wasn't out there much. Without knowing the full story, I won't criticize, but it did seem curious. It felt like the Bucks were leaving some stuff on the table there. But either way, going back to what I just said, I mean, it always sucks the day your team is eliminated, whether it's in the regular season or the playoffs, and your team is no longer playing for the rest of the season. It's especially more, I think, more hard when you have a team that's good enough you think to do something, But the last two seasons of Bucs football, let's hit the rewind button to the final play of the 2019 regular season. Jameis Winston has just thrown a pick six to Atlanta, his 347th interception of the season, 128 of which were returned for touchdowns. All right. And we as a franchise are in the doldrums. We don't, right? Remember that? It wasn't long ago. It was 2 years ago. Last season, last game of the 2019 season against Atlanta, Raymond James Stadium. Overtime pick six for the Falcons win. And think about from that moment to standing here today, think about what a complete and total emotional and psychological shift that we have undergone in our minds and our hearts from that moment to standing here right now. The Bucs are, like I said, 24-9 in their last 33 regular season games. If you make it the last overall 39 games of the two seasons, counting the six playoff games, they are 29-10, 5-1 in the playoffs. They won a Super Bowl. They won a division championship. They fixed their uniforms. They were wearing those god-awful uniforms with the alarm clock numbers and the awful colors. I mean, night and day, this where I am as a fan mentally, night and day in just 2 years' time. It's amazing. I cannot get over it. It's the most rapid and intense, complete overhaul one of my franchises has undergone. All the teams I follow, the Rays, the Lightning, all of them, all right? You heard all this build it brick by brick stuff. It felt like we had a damn, mega crane just dropping, boom, boom, boom. It built the thing in no time. So think about that. And here's another thing to think about. If you take that 29-10 record in the last two seasons, it's 28-3 versus every other team besides the Saints and the Rams. And the Bucs are 1-7 versus the Saints and the Rams somehow. And so maybe some of that's randomness. Maybe there's something to it. But, you know, either way, if you're a Buck fan and you're looking at the big picture right now, you have to be at least pretty happy because this is a fan base that was nowhere and a franchise that was nowhere a very short time ago. And now here we are, still one of the elite in the NFL. I mean, you're not going to win it every year. You're just not. So can they stay there? That'll be the questions for the offseason. They've got a lot of cap room on one hand, but they've also got a lot of free agents in the other. They don't need to keep all of them, but even the ones they do want to keep are going to get that cap room eaten up real quick. And we got plenty of time for all this. Obviously, the main thing is Tom Brady, though. If Tom Brady's coming back for one more year, that means Gronkowski's probably coming back for at least one more year. That means there's a little bit more stability. The Bucs still need to look at the future at quarterback either way. I mean, it's too early to judge Kyle Trask. I've never been, totally enamored. And I'm a Gator, so, you know, I watched him play even all through college, and I love the guy. But I don't feel, you don't know till he gets in there with any of these guys. And the preseason I'm not concerned about. But I just don't feel like, I mean, that's a hope, not a plan. You know, they say hope is not a plan. So, you know, obviously it depends on if Brady's coming back for sure or not, even though I think he is. But the worst time, I can say this, Andrew Brandt says this. He's a former executive with the Packers, and he's a guy I follow on Twitter. He's got a lot of insight about how front offices work and stuff like that. But he says the worst time to look for a quarterback is when you need a quarterback, always. So the Bucs need to start thinking about that now. Of course, if they were not going to have Brady, they could do the same thing they did to get Brady and go into free agency. I've already had people email me about Russell Wilson. Matter of fact, let me see if I can pull that email. But yeah, what do you think about Russell Wilson, Bobby? Can the Bucs get him? Hey, I would do that, by the way, right now, as if that was a real thing. Here it is. Rob emailed me. Rob, thanks for the email. Bobby, what do you think the chances are of landing Russell Wilson if Brady gets bleep-whipped into retiring? Thanks, Rob. Hey, his wife's got a right to weigh in a little bit on that, doesn't she? Take it from me. I know this is not apples to apples. Take it from me, a guy who I work part-time, and when I do work, it's nights and weekends. I do TV production work. I do this show. But for the most part, I'm a stay-at-home dad. I take care of the kids. I'm home alone with two kids, usually. My wife's at work, okay? And it would be cool. Now, my wife's not retiring, obviously, but I mean, if we already had millions of dollars, I might say, hey, you know, be cool if we were both here with the kids instead of me always being here with the kids, and their kids are a little bit older. So I get where Giselle's coming from. I'm not gonna call it being bleep whipped. You know, she's got a right to say, hey, man, what else are we gonna do here? Are you really gonna do this another year? I totally get where she's probably coming from. Not that she's, I mean, again, she's not there sitting there with two kids like pulling her hair out. They've a million people probably helping them. But you know what I'm saying. So that's a little bit different. But back to your greater question, Rob. Yeah, I don't think the chances are great, but I didn't think the chances of getting Brady were great either, and they got him. And I would take Russell Wilson in a heartbeat. I mean, an absolute heartbeat. I think Seattle has wasted him in a lot of ways, and he's still pretty young. And I know people say, oh, Aaron Rodgers, what's his next move? I mean, aside from the off-field stuff, I just don't think that's very likely that Aaron Rodgers will be coming to Tampa Bay. But either way, Brady, one more year, I still think is more likely than anything else. And that gives us another year in the window. And so, you know, all these other offseason decisions will follow after that. But I think they'll take care of Chris Godwin. Carlton Davis is a big one. We'll go through all the free agents and all the things. You know, Godwin will, you know, if he's coming off the injury, he's still going to cost some money. And I'd like to see the Bucs take care of him and not penalize him for getting hurt, trying to help them. Carlton Davis could be franchise tagged for $17.5 million if we get to that point. Either way, we'll figure it all out. Free agency, the draft's in April. By the way, the Bucs pick 27th. That's official now, having not advanced to the conference championship round, so we have that to look forward to. The 2022 home schedule is an exciting one if you're looking for reasons to get excited. I mean, it's tough, so, I mean, there's that. But if you're just talking about it from a fan standpoint, the teams we're going to watch the Bucs play against, besides the two games home and road with the three division teams, besides those, which are the same every year, here's the Bucs' 2022 home schedule. And just think of this from the quarterbacks, okay, that are going to be coming in here. Although Green Bay probably won't have Rodgers. But anyway, Green Bay, Kansas City, the Rams, Seattle, Cincinnati and Joe Burrow, and Baltimore. That's our home schedule besides New Orleans, Carolina, and Atlanta. And on the road, too, for that matter. You got Dallas, San Francisco, Arizona, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland. So a lot going on there, and it's going to be a lot of fun. In the meantime, I guess the most immediate thing is seeing what happens with Byron Leftwich as of this recording, which I'm doing this on Thursday, midday. He has not officially been named to anything yet. Of course, it seems like it'd be pretty unlikely he wouldn't be named something soon as the head coach of somebody, whether it's Jacksonville or whatever else, but that's not official yet. But if they lose him, you know, they'll have to figure that out too. These are the things that happen when you're a good franchise, though. I mean, it should be happening, and I think Byron Leftwich has done a great job with the Bucs. You know, I heard some people saying, oh, whatever, Leftwich, I mean, what has he done? You know, he's got Brady, blah, blah, blah. You know, here's what I give Leftwich the most credit for. Last season, before the bye, and we were criticizing them, they're running too much on first down, they're not doing enough play action, blah, blah, blah. The bye week happened after that Chiefs loss, and the total adjustment they made, and I don't want to say they completely, you know, reimagined themselves, but they made a lot of changes in how they approached their offense in the second half. And it wasn't the only reason they won the Super Bowl, but it was a huge reason why they won the Super Bowl and didn't lose another game after that. So I think Leftwich deserves a lot of credit for that. And I think he deserves a head coaching opportunity. I hope he gets one, you know, unselfishly. Selfishly, of course, you want to have continuity in your organization, but the Bucs will figure that out. And in the meantime, we'll see what happens with him. And, you know, I don't know if Todd Bowles is going anywhere necessarily. Spytek in the front office may get hired as somebody's GM. These are all things that are the natural occurrences that happen in the offseason, and we'll see about them. But either way, you know, the hard part right now is that it's over for the season, and nobody ever wants that. You know, conference championship Sunday is going to be a fun day, but, man, it's when your team's in it, it's a whole other level. So I'm not going to say the other two games will be tough to watch. I'll still watch them. You know, we didn't lose on a terrible call or anything. I remember the Bert Emanuel play in the 1999 playoffs. I couldn't even watch that Super Bowl. But this isn't like that. I'll watch both games. I think it's going to be a fun weekend of football. But, yeah, it felt like it could have been us. And now that it's not, always a tough one to swallow. But just like always, folks, we will endure. We will be back, and this show will be back next week. And I'll tell you, there have been very few times over the course of almost 50 years now of Buccaneers football, when it's been this good to be a Bucs fan. We don't know how long it'll be this good, but even in losing on Sunday, savor where this franchise is right now, because it's in a pretty good place, and I can only hope that they can somehow sustain being, and I'm not just talking about defending Super Bowl champions, but just being one of the league's elite, which is, in a lot of ways, you know, that's what it really comes down to. And see how much longer they can sustain that, because it's so much more fun this way, and it's really, really cool. So with all that in mind, that is it for this week. We'll be back next week. We'll know our Super Bowl matchup by then, but either way, You know what? You take a few days, it's tough, you pick your head back up, and you take your first step forward of many. And your chest out there, nice and proud, you know, flex those pecs a little bit, walk out that door and say, yeah, you're damn right, I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. And I will be tomorrow too, just like I was yesterday and the day before. So take it easy, everybody. I'll be back next week. Enjoy conference championship weekend. Enjoy Gasparilla, even though it's going to be freezing if you're going down there. Have a great time. It's good to have that back after missing last season. Be safe. Have fun. And wherever you are, talk to you next weekend. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.